Good morning. You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's show, we'll hear about police officers in schools. The Boulder Valley School District has taken steps to phase them out, but some people feel it should be happening sooner rather than later. Then a new report cites government red tape, anti-immigration rhetoric and challenges to the Affordable Care Act as reasons why the number of Colorado children without health insurance continues to rise. We'll have more coming up on why children of colour are the most affected. After that, this weekend, the Latinx Parent Summit happens virtually. We'll hear about its origins and how they're advocating for Spanish-speaking families in education. Then two regular Friday morning features, a food waste tip from John Lendorf, followed by Trends Diary, before Kathy is in for Connections. And today she'll discuss the war on the Environmental Protection Agency. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. The left-hand Canyon Fire in Boulder County is now 100% contained. Late yesterday, local officials announced that the fire was still at 460 acres but was under complete containment. The Calwood Fire is at more than 10,000 acres and is 55% contained. Several evacuation orders were lifted yesterday and US Highway 36 was reopened between Lyons and Boulder. Some firefighting resources from the two Boulder County fires may be redirected to the East Troublesome Fire, which originated in Grant County. The fire exploded on Wednesday and is now more than 170,000 acres. It crossed the Continental Divide on Thursday, leading to the closure of the Rocky Mountain National Park and mandatory evacuation orders to be issued for parts of Estes Park. Thousands of people have now been evacuated as a result of that fire, which grew at a rate of 6,000 acres per hour, driven by strong winds. Cooler temperatures and higher humidity has helped firefighting efforts in the past 24 hours, but Paul Schlater, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Boulder, says the East Troublesome Fire on the western part of the Continental Divide may not get the same moisture that we're seeing along the Front Range.
You know, into Grand County near Granby and Grand Lake and those areas west of the Divide, it's been warm, very windy, and very dry all afternoon and evening, and that's going to continue because that cold air never made it over the top of the Divide into that area.
The East Troublesome Fire is now the second largest wildfire in Colorado history. Meanwhile, the largest wildfire in state history, the Cameron Peak Fire, continues to burn east of Estes Park. That fire is nearly 207,000 acres and is 57% contained. There was little growth in the fire on Thursday and some evacuation orders were lifted. Smoke from all the fires is contributing to ongoing bad air quality around Colorado. In an unusual request, attorneys for a Colorado State University football player held at gunpoint by a Loveland resident are now asking a judge to force prosecutors to file hate crime charges. Steve Miller has more.
The Denver Post reports that on June 11th, the Loveland resident, Scott Gudmundson, is accused of holding the football player Barry Wesley and another man at gunpoint while the two students were canvassing a neighborhood for a roofing company. Gudmundson faces charges of felony menacing, impersonating a police officer, prohibited use of a firearm, and false imprisonment. According to Gudmundson's arrest affidavit, he is accused of kneeling on Wesley's neck and pushing a gun into the student's back. The motion filed Wednesday argues that the 8th Judicial District Attorney's Office should file a bias-motivated crime charge against Gudmundson, who is white, because of comments he made and his connections to a group called Soldiers of Vahalia Shooting Club. The district attorney's office, which covers Larimer and Jackson counties, felt that there was not enough evidence to support a hate crime charge. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The University of Colorado in Boulder announced Thursday that the spring 2021 semester would go ahead in a similar model to the current semester. Students will have a mixture of in-person, remote and hybrid courses. Spring break is cancelled, however, and instead the semester will start on Thursday, January 14th, 3 days later than previously planned, with 2 days off for students on February 17th and March 25th. Highs today in the upper 30s. Tomorrow it'll be warmer with highs in the 60s, but temperatures dropping again for Sunday and Monday with snow in the forecast. Smoke will be present for today and tonight. The NAACP of Boulder County has been calling for the removal of police officers from local schools. They've cited recent data from the Colorado Department of Education, which shows that students of colour in BVSD are disciplined, sent out of the classroom, suspended or even referred to police at higher rates than their white peers. So are English language learners and students receiving special education services. Rosanna Longo spoke with Richard Garcia, the school board member who represents District G, about the resolution to remove police officers from schools by a specific date.
First of all, the NAACP asked that we do have a decision by October or November around that situation. And now we're going to stretch it all the way to August of 2021. Maybe. I don't know what the resolution is going to look like yet, but at least that was the indication. The rationale for that is to give schools time to adjust and get ready for all of that to happen. However, then I started thinking, well, wait a minute, you know, we're in a pandemic right now, and I know that high schools are not going to go full time. They're probably going to be going to school one day a week. Why are we needing SROs if kids are only in school one day a week? And why do we have to wait till 2021 to be able to make a decision on that? So there's a lot of questions still to be asked. And I am waiting to see what the resolution looks like. And before I ask my questions at the Tuesday school board meeting, because that's another opportunity that we'll have. It'll be a study item, meaning that we'll be able to ask questions around the resolution. We'll see. We'll see what happens with the resolution. I think that's where we're at now. What will that resolution look like?
I am speaking with Richard Garcia. We are talking about Boulder Valley School Board supporting the ending of the SRO program. Why is this so urgent for our students of color to take a look at the presence of officers at the schools?
The District Accountability Committee, as well as the Equity Council, looked at the information provided to them as it relates to tickets, summons, etc., over the past 3 years. And what they found was that there was a huge disproportionate number of kids of color receiving those tickets and summons. Again, the research that has been done around the school-to-prison pipeline, that's where it starts, okay? The school-to-prison pipeline starts by an SRO or a policeman issuing a ticket or a summons to kids. They go to court. I don't know what the outcome of that would be, but that's where the school to prison pipeline begins. And if you also heard, part of the research that was done from these two committees is that most of the tickets and summons, et cetera, were given for offenses that were not violent offenses. They were like vaping, substance abuse, those kinds of things. And both committees thought that the school district itself should be in a better position to be able to handle those particular discipline issues as opposed to a police officer. So for me, I think it's real critical for a number of reasons. One is that with the George Floyd happening in Minnesota and all of the uprising that went on with the police brutality and all of those issues stemming from the George Floyd murder, on this way, and I think that's one of the reasons why the NAACP was so keen on trying to move this issue forward as quickly as possible, is that we have those issues, and it raised the level of urgency, I guess, if you will, nationally around police departments and their own code of conduct, and what they're trained to do is not to work as counselors. Police officers are trained to enforce the law. And one of my concerns around all of that, I don't know whether it's happened or not, but it could happen. And that is that if a student pushes back a little bit in terms of trying to exercise their own rights, and the police officer gets irritated or aggravated because the student is not complying with his order to stop doing or whatever he's doing, then things could turn out to be not very good for the student. Okay. And those are my concerns around that. Plus, we don't know how many of those particular students that got tickets or summons, the research is not there. Where are they now? You're talking about 3 years of information that we received. So if a kid was given a summons or a ticket 3 years ago, where is that kid? Did that kid graduate from high school? Or is that kid in jail? Or is that kid suffering from that? Okay. Another thing, too, is they get busted for substance abuse, let's say, for example, and it goes on their record. It messes up all their opportunities to go to college, because if they're applying for federal financial aid, and you can check the federal financial aid form yourself. It asks that question. And if they say yes, their opportunity to get financial aid is zero. There's a lot of reasons to be concerned. And I understand that some students have developed great relationships with some of the SROs, you know. But I don't know if there are students of color. What I'm understanding and what I'm hearing from emails that I'm reading, it appears that they're coming from white kids or parents of white kids. Okay. So there's a lot of issues around this. And I really don't think that police officers in schools is the right answer. I think it's reactionary. And I think we need to do more around working with our own people in our schools to be able to provide other types of remedies for this type of behavior. Another issue that came up is resources. So if we don't have school resource officers, what's going to take the place of school resource officers? Well, if we're so dependent on school resource officers to take care of everything, boy, we missed the boat someplace. And I know that our counselors are pretty well inundated with the number of counselors, with the number of children per counselor in our high schools. I think it's like about 1 in 400 or something like that. It's a huge workload for counselors. And I know that we also have interventionists in our high schools. I know that we have a bunch of other individuals working in our high schools.
What would be the best outcome? Where those resources can go to improve the lives of students in schools?
One of the things that we have done, an improvement, is that we were able to, again, go back and look at the discipline policy that we had. We revamped that discipline policy because it was all over the place. And I believe Dr. Anderson made reference to that, that there was no consistency in reference to disciplining our students. School X would do something different. School Y would do something different, et cetera. I made a request for information around school discipline, and I got the information on school discipline as it relates to the Latino kids and kids of color, okay? And what I found on that whole piece is that Latinos are 3 times more likely to be suspended from high school or more likely to be disciplined, okay? 3 times more likely. And then the information was so inconsistent that you couldn't figure out what were the reasons for the disciplines because they were all over the place. So the new discipline policy, I think, is going to help us get through all of this. It's a new policy. It's a revamp policy. And then in addition to that, we have now a policy on bullying, which we never had before. We'll wait and see what happens with the resolution and see where it takes us. I'm hoping that we don't have to wait till August of 2021, especially when we have this lull in terms of all kids not in school and SROs not being in schools. And I think there's time now so that we can get to a resolution faster than August of 2021. That's my hope.
That's Richard Garcia, a member of the Board of Directors of the Boulder Valley School District, speaking with KGNU's Rosanna Longo. Next Tuesday, the BVSD board will continue discussing when the resolution to remove police officers from schools will take place. A new report shows that between 2016 and 2019, the number of Colorado children without health insurance rose by 28%. To 73,000. KGNU's Ros Brown says because the data was collected prior to the coronavirus pandemic, children's advocates worry that rates will continue to climb.
Even before the coronavirus pandemic brought the economy to its knees, the number of Colorado children without health insurance was on the rise, according to a new Georgetown University Center for Children and Families report released Friday. Executive Director Joan Elker says this shouldn't have happened because it's when the economy was doing well.
We had a pretty strong economy in 2018 and 2019. And the fact that the number of uninsured children went up when unemployment was so low is extremely troubling. And of course, this data is pre-pandemic.
In Colorado in 2019, 73,000 kids were uninsured, a 28% increase from 3 years earlier. Erin Miller with the Colorado Children's Campaign says between 2018 and 2019 alone, nearly 10,000 more kids lost coverage, the largest single year increase in more than a decade.
73,000 Colorado kids went into the pandemic lacking health insurance coverage, lacking access to healthcare services, lacking the financial security that health insurance provides.
Colorado's rate of uninsured kids at 5.5% is close to the national rate of 5.7% and reverses a long trend of kids gaining coverage. Miller says the numbers are almost certain to climb since thousands of families lost employer-based coverage in the economic fallout from COVID-19. According to Alker, the sharp increase in the number of uninsured children of color is likely linked to the Trump administration's immigration policies, creating a climate of fear.
Many of those families are afraid to interact with the government. They're afraid to sign their child up for Medicaid, even though he or she is clearly eligible for public coverage. And so you see a very large jump in the uninsured rate for Latino children.
Alker also mentions the administration's efforts to undermine the Affordable Care Act, including eliminating funding for outreach and navigators to help people enroll, along with additional red tape that makes it harder for families to access Medicaid or CHIP.
What's so troubling is that, you know, we've had years and years of progress as a country in a bipartisan way to reduce the number of uninsured children. And what we see now is that trend has clearly turned around since President Trump took office. Families have been getting negative messages that coverage is going away. At the same time, that community-based resources to help them find public coverage have shrunk.
Research shows kids who have health insurance are more likely to graduate from high school, attend college, and be healthier, more productive adults. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
This weekend, the El Paso Movement, which was formed as a way to help close the opportunity gap in education, is hosting their fifth annual Latinx Parent Summit. It'll be happening virtually. Teresa Garcia, executive director of El Paso, told Rosanna Longo how important it is for Spanish-speaking parents to get information in their first language from professionals within the community.
The educational achievement gap between Latino and Anglo students in Boulder County is the largest in the state of Colorado. Teresa Garcia, executive director of El Paso, a Latino parent movement designed to close the achievement gap, talks about the importance of offering to Latino parents a conference in Spanish that brings bilingual and bicultural professionals from within the community to talk about topics that could benefit their children's performance in school.
Who are professionals in the issue? Why not bring in those people that can explain things profoundly and a very, very deep way in the language of the parents, in the way they understand clearly what the message is? There are not that many conferences in Spanish. There are a lot of conferences in English, and I'm so glad. And there were people that asked me, why don't you do it for the English speakers? Because the English speakers have a lot of opportunities. Our Spanish-speaking parents don't have that opportunity. We're giving it to them. I don't mean to discriminate. It's just to give the Spanish-speaking parents the time, the place, the opportunity for them to use their first language to really get to the bottom of the issues. And it's wonderful for all of us who are bilingual. We love it, but we know there's a little bit of a difference when we are speaking or we're listening to somebody to speak our own language, how the understanding is more profound. So that's what we're doing.
This virtual Latinx Parent Summit, known as La Cúspide, this year, because of the restrictions in place due to COVID-19, will take place virtually this coming Saturday and Sunday. It is a free conference that will bring topics to the parents in Spanish, like how to talk about substance abuse, how to keep mental health when facing fears on contracting COVID-19, how to make sure your kids can connect online to continue their education, how to deal with racial discrimination, and how to protect your kids from sexual abuse. Amongst other important themes to keep on learning how to navigate the educational system.
let's give Spanish the place it deserves in this community. In that way, everybody can see that we are not destroying anything. We're actually making it even greater and better, because our understanding of each other is when you're doing your first language. I think this is one of the best steps for our Spanish-speaking parents to continue with the desire to learn. Los padres que hablan español aquí en el condado de Boulder pertenecen al condado de Boulder, y aún no importa que hables español o qué idioma hablas, lo importante es que tú tengas la información y que actúes de acuerdo, y que sus hijos sean los que se benefician para el futuro.
García says that parents that speak Spanish in Boulder County belong to the county, and it is not important what language they speak, but what is important is that they get the right information to act accordingly for the benefit of their children's future. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo.
The conference will take place Saturday and Sunday online. Find out more at elpasomovement.org. And it's time now for another food waste tip from John Lendorf.
Hi, it's John Lendorf from KGNU's Radio Nibbles, here with another practical way to cut food waste, save flavor, and save some money. For instance, we literally throw out a ton of still edible bread and baked products every week. Do this instead. First off, store loaves properly so they never spoil. Bread freezes well, really well, especially if you're making toast. Day-old and dry bread, everything from sourdough to English muffins and tortillas and bread heels and crust cut off a sandwich. You can use those in other dishes. Slices can be used for the famous avocado toast or for bruschetta appetizers. It can be covered in cheese and put on onion soup. Stale bread can be run through a blender to become breadcrumbs for meatloaf or mac and cheese. You can also cut it into cubes. Bread can become croutons for salad, or part of a bread and tomato salad, or used in a bread stuffing for turkey. My favorite way is using chunks of various breads in bread pudding soaked in a custard of egg and milk and sweetness. Remember, composting is a last resort, and you can find all of these tips and other food waste information at news.kgnu.org.
Up next, it's Trends Diary.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, my name is Devin Smith, and I am an adult services reference librarian at the Longmont Public Library. Under normal circumstances, I curate the book collections, oversee in-house programs, and help visitors at the reference desk. When the pandemic forced us to close on March 13th, the normal things that happen in a library all ceased. The building closed, paper books were unavailable, and every contact was suddenly over email, phone, or social media. We scrambled to help our patrons in the absence of a physical space. The hardest thing for many of our patrons was losing computer and internet access. They rely on us for printing, scanning, job searching, banking, communication, and education. Now some people drive to sit in our parking lot and use our Wi-Fi, or are stuck at home without any means to contact the outside world, and we worry about them. Another need the library fulfills is human interaction. Our patrons miss coming into the building to browse and talk to staff. Some call us regularly to ask questions, and sometimes just to talk. In the weeks since we've shut down, we've created a number of virtual programs. During our Keep Calm and Read On sessions on Facebook, patrons list three books they've enjoyed, and our librarians and other readers offer suggestions for similar titles. An interactive bilingual meetup called Hablamos allows people to practice language skills. We also offer virtual story times, writers groups meetings, YouTube BookBytes reviews by library staff, and Strongmont Stories, an audio archive chronicling people's lives in the time of COVID. We are open now, and we do have special pandemic hours, so you can check the website for those. We also have our own YouTube channel where you can find all of our programs if you've missed one. Libraries have had to be fluid and flexible in this socially distant world, and we have risen to the occasion. In the end, a library is less about the building and the books that fill it, and more about the people that connect there.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
Thanks for listening to The Morning Magazine here at KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran.